You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto. We are ever so glad you're joining us today as we try and make technology fit just a little bit better in your lives. And Art Factora, I must say, I am somewhat profoundly disappointed. You go off and you gallivant about the Sunshine State. Is it the Sunshine State? What's
no,
that's
Florida.
It
should be.
It's Hawaii. And,
it should
and,
be the spam state.
And you, a tin of macadamia nuts is what you bring me.
Well, I don't have enough.
Everybody
room.
Brings back a tin of macadamia.
You know how expensive luggage is now? I brought you back this 10 that I'm rocking. What do you think?
I can't tell.
Yes, you can.
Did you?
You see the farmer town on my arm?
Yeah. Did you go boxers or Speedo?
You'll see the pictures. I'll post them online. You can check my blog.
For those of you who don't know, Art Factora has been enjoying himself in Mexico, Hawaii. For a family wedding, and I'm sure that it was just a wonderful time. Ask me what I've been doing the last week while you've been off having fun.
Are you forcing me because I'm supposed to care? Or
yes.
Okay. Hey, Steve, what were you doing while I was gone?
I've been rehearsing.
For?
Lend Me a Tenor.
You told me about this.
Yes, we're getting close. November 3rd. Shameless self-promotion going on here. November 3rd at the Metro Theater. Have you ever been to the Metro Theater?
Yeah, I saw a production actually there last year.
Well, what did you see? The Complete Works of William Shakespeare.
No, it was... I wish I could remember. I was very impressed, though.
Okay.
I was very impressed.
And they've got new seats in the Metro Theater this year, so you'll be even happier and more comfortable as you sit in the seat.
It's quaint. It's right off the Arthur Lang Bridge, if you don't know, by the old Fraser Arms. I spent a few nights there.
Yes, and when I was a young man, I did theater there, and that's where I learned. I kind of cut my teeth in theater, and I used to do musicals and plays there, and I miss doing plays, and I'm back at doing a production of Lend Me a Tenor, which is an absolutely, and I'm not just saying this because I'm in it, it is one of the funniest scripts I've ever read. I think it's the funniest script I've ever read, and that's why I wanted to do it. And it's a fun, funny show. It's a farce. It's hilarious. You will hurt yourself laughing.
Oh, you can count me in. I'm in.
November 3rd, we open.
Okay.
And we run to December the 1st. And, I had to got to shave off the beard for it. You know it's an important show if I'm going to shave my beard.
When did you? Show. How long have you had that beard?
Since I was 12.
Wow, that's not bad.
I know. I've had to shave it off occasionally for different things I've done in the past. For little things. But... It, by and large, I've had a beard since I was, I'm going to say 30.
Huh.
So that's like 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus.
4 years.
Give or take 30.
4 years and then some. It's been a busy time. Preparing for these shows is always a lot of work. It's always a lot of work.
You're a busy man.
Yeah. And you know what the nice thing about it is for me doing a play is I live so much of my world in the world of technology. You know, I mean, the videos I produce, you know, sitting in front of a webcam and a camera and, you know, and even here in the studio, it's all technology. We're doing everything digitally. It's all digital.
Mm-hmm.
There, it's all analog. I mean, the whole show, it's just you. And that's the beauty of live theater is, you know, it's you are going to see a performance. When you go to a live theater performance, you are going to see a performance that's going to happen once as it is and never is it going to be seen again the exact same way.
I have been lucky, or I don't know if lucky is the right word, but I've never really seen, or maybe they just were able to recover really well, a huge mistake in a live performance.
Oh, when it goes off the rails, it's the best.
That's what I'm hoping for one day.
Well, you know when you give a comedy performance, that it's never the same two nights in a row, right?
Absolutely not.
I mean, some of your jokes will be the same, and some of your delivery will be the same, but it's never received the same.
The audience is always different.
And you know that the ones that are most memorable is when something happens and you recover.
Yes.
When the shows that you remember, I bet, from your performances are when you've had a heckler and you've won.
absolutely. That's correct. I am now in the point in for how long I've been doing comedy. The ones that yeah, that the show seems to be just going horribly wrong. The comics before you aren't doing very well, and then you jump on and you change the room, or the show's going fine and you start your show really slowly and you're able to bring it back.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's a challenge. But the shows where everything goes fine, you just do your material, it's meh, it's okay.
And the while every performance is different, every audience is different based on the weather and the amount of energy in the room, and it's magic. I love live theater. I think you know, if I could make a career out of it, I would. But the problem is nobody will pay me anything to do it. So, or not enough. So it's probably, you feel the same about comedy.
It's very similar, yes.
Yeah.
The comedies that, when I got let go from my other job in radio, people said, well, now it's finally time you can focus on your comedy. But unfortunately, you can make a career out of it. Comedy and Canadian entertainment is the one industry that pays less than radio. So
yeah, but unless you go down to the States, and then all Canadians are just gods of comedy down in the States. You head down to L.A., you'll be the funniest guy on the planet. You'll have your own TV show inside of 3 weeks.
Hmm. Starting next week.
No, wait till we wrap up this production. I need you. Okay. I need you. We've got a great show lined up today. Joe Wozni is in talking about his book. We also have Joe and John Beeler. We're going to talk about crowdfunding, which is a topic which is fascinating me these days. We have Mike Vardy talking to us about productivity. He's going to be talking a little bit about doing what you love as opposed to doing what you're good at. It might be a good lesson for you, Art.
Hmm.
And Julian Saunders is going to come in. We're going to talk a little bit about Microsoft Surface Tablet. It's coming next week or later this week, and it's, we haven't been paying enough attention to what's going on in the world of Microsoft, so we're going to do all of that today, right here on Dottotech. Joe Wozni is the CEO of Concentric, a company which focuses on assisting individuals and corporations in establishing their online identity, creating a strategy for how they're going to be perceived and how they're going to work their way online. And he is also the author of The Digital Dollar, which is a great roadmap for helping, well, for helping individuals and companies determine how to basically, how to present yourself online? The bottom line, it's all about identity?
It's all about developing a strategy that you can use to for online for your business goals.
You know, I was having a conversation with a friend the other day, and she mentioned that one of the biggest challenges that she sees with online, with companies dealing with their online presence, is it is too easy to just try a strategy out, because it costs almost nothing to do a Facebook ad campaign or to change the look of the website. And so people start basically just saying, oh, well, let's try this and let's do this. And there's no patience. They try something out. If they don't get immediate traction from it, they don't really know what they want to get out of it other than they want it to help raise their profile or to get hits or to get clicks. And so the crafting of a strategy, of a business plan, is starting to go out the window due to online marketing. Is that a fair assessment, you think?
I would say that online's an enabler for a business.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to be effective online, we promote that you need to create a digital roadmap. And that digital roadmap should outline your goals, should outline how you're going to measure things. And that should provide you with a path to follow based on the fact that you have so many options in online. And as you say, it's so easy to make a simple change and lose sight of the goal that you had for online in the first place.
How difficult is it to create a digital roadmap? I mean, how much detail has to go into it, and what does it have to encompass?
Well, there's two types of digital roadmaps. There's a digital roadmap that outlines your strategy. From a difficulty point of view, most organizations have a tough time expressing what their goals are.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, you have to express your business goals in order to be able to develop a digital roadmap. So that's sometimes the biggest challenge.
So the business plan before, which is whatever your mission statement or what you are as an enterprise, that has to come first. You have to know who you are.
I would suggest so, because online supports a business. It's not necessarily what a business is.
Yes, and that's probably where a lot of the difficulties come in, is that you think you're busy, you think you're doing something, but you haven't. That's what she was saying, is you start doing these campaigns, you start trying to do things online. If you don't know who you are, though, you're just, you know, you're four sheets to the wind. You're moving back and forth, and you don't have any direction.
Well, and if you don't set up goals that you wish to measure, and you're moving and adding changes on a regular basis, it's tough to understand where your return on investment is from online and how online has provided a benefit to you.
How difficult is it to convince a client to take that step back? They hire you and they say, fix us up online. Give us a digital, give us a, you know, help us with our plans online, because that's what they see as the immediate gratification is, you know, you have this great online presence. How difficult is it for you to get them to take a step back and really look at their business's identity first?
I think for some companies, small businesses, it's a little tougher because there's not enough hours in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Larger organizations tend to have more structure or more people who can actually step back and look at things from a broader picture sometimes. And one of the reasons for writing the Digital Dollar book was to assist organizations that hopefully they would read this, and then after reading this, they'd be able to work with us and get some of the insights that we usually provide them throughout the book.
Is part of what you do then dealing with change? Because I'm wondering if, you know, if I look at my online presence, I say, I'm not sure I really want to examine it that closely because I might not like what I see. Which would encompass change, which as a baby boomer is one of the most difficult things for us to deal with.
Online, for a lot of people, I think is synonymous with change.
Yeah.
And we promote that doing a few things really well is very important. We don't promote changing everything that you're doing with the Digital Dollar or with Concentric.
Do you have a few of the... Are there classic mistakes or classic errors that companies are making? Are there a few things that you see over and over again repeated?
I think so. I'd say one of the ones I've seen very recently, particularly with mobile, as mobile technologies are becoming more prevalent in mm-hmm. our life, is that a lot of organizations aren't necessarily thinking that some of their products, for example, a simple website or a simple web page, should be mobile enabled. And sometimes they're missing part of their audience at the same time by not using, say, a simple tool like Duda Mobile or one of those simple tools mm-hmm. to make an online presence.
Or having a responsive site.
Or a responsive site from mobile from the beginning.
And for people that don't know, responsive sites are sites that from the time that you design the site and they first build it, it automatically formats it for the device which is viewing it. So it'll automatically strip out a bunch of things if you're viewing it on an iPhone or a mobile or a phone, and then it'll add more and more layers as you go to an iPad or to a full computer. It actually recognizes the device that's looking at it and then formats it correctly for that particular device.
Yeah. Another classic mistake is not looking at analytics. And a lot of companies produce content on a regular basis, but they don't necessarily look to see how consumers use it, and if they're using the right type of content, or if they're actually producing the right type of content that people want to consume.
Because there's a wealth of information. There's a science to reading analytics and starting to understand it, and it might seem overwhelming to people, so they step back from it and they don't try and make that effort. Is part of the difficulty that people don't have clear goals and objectives of what success looks like? The reason I'm saying this is I worked with a small theater company who they had small amount of traffic to their website, maybe 15 or 20 people a day. And so they were not paying super close attention to the quality of their website, because they said to me, well, we only have 15 or 20 people a day visit. And I said, well, what would happen if you had 15 or 20 people phone the box office? What would that look like to you? And that's a vision of success. We get caught up with the millions and hundreds of millions of visitors that are online, and we don't necessarily know what we're looking for from our little piece of the internet, what success looks like for us.
I'd agree with you, and I would say that some organizations aren't clear on what success means to them, but they mm-hmm. still need to move forward. And so we advise them to move forward in everything that they produce to produce it with great production values and great quality. And at the same time, to treat every visitor that they have on their website or every fan that they have on their Facebook page or a follower in Twitter as an opportunity to build a one-to-one relationship.
Mm. When a company undertakes building a roadmap, does everything stop? Do they have to stop and take a step back? Or are they typically able to continue, you know, moving ahead with what they've been doing and all those sorts of things, and then slowly fold their new direction in?
Yeah, we wouldn't recommend anyone to stop.
That's a fear. Yeah.
Not at all. But I think that there's enough opportunity that that's gradual changes can actually be implemented, and those gradual changes can be implemented towards an end goal. And stopping your business is not good for your business, and stopping your business online, particularly when you have visitors, your customers are expecting good things from you, so you can't stop your business in mid-flight.
Is there any area of technology that really excites you? For me, from my perspective, I think the next wave of technology is going to be around all of the location services, which is, you know, what Apple's MapGate is all about. Apple figures they have to own that physical space where you understand that where the phone or the device knows where you are in order to put you in a place in order to benefit, in order to leverage all of the different local assets that are available. That, to me, is the most exciting new direction of technology. Is there one that you see after writing The Digital Dollar that you think your next book might be about?
I think one of the things that excites me is content marketing. And I think that many organizations produce content, but they don't realize the value of it. And I think that content marketing, I was reading something today from eMarketer that said, despite all the talk about content marketing, a very, very small number of organizations and agencies have actually ever even considered implementing a content marketing plan, but about 70% of them plan to do it in the next year.
I don't know what content marketing is. Explain that to me.
Content marketing would be producing content for any device. It could be a mobile device. It could be your website. It could be on Facebook. And that content reflects your brand. That content is actually useful to the consumer, often providing some utility value. And that content moves one away from traditional online advertising and assists them in supporting their search engine marketing, assists them with supporting many of the goals that they want to have, but providing real value when someone logs on to a website or logs on to a web page. And in probably replacement to traditional advertising that we see online.
So the idea behind content marketing could be encapsulated as you're going to give away something of value that is related to your business, but could be tangential to a certain extent, to make sure that the visitor to your site or the people that you're engaging with get some real value, as opposed to you getting the value of trying to sell something to them. You're making sure they get some value out of their visit.
Correctly. And what it also does is it's tough to get people to an online location, mm-hmm. but then it keeps them there, and often it'll keep them coming back.
Mm-hmm.
So the value is you're right, tangential often cases, and in turn the content marketing is probably one of the future trends that interests me. If you ask me, mm-hmm. what was going to be the kind of the next path of the digital dollar.
So where can people get the book? Digital Dollar is available.
Digital Dollar is available through Amazon, mm-hmm. iTunes, Barnes & Noble. It's available for your Kobo reader. It's available
Excellent.
Directly from the publisher, Fairwinds Press. And everywhere possible, we've tried to put it in every distribution channel, and it's available as a book and an ebook.
Excellent. Joe Wozni is the CEO at Concentrix. I thank you for your time, and good luck with the book.
Thank you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
John Beeler joins me now, and I've talked Joe Wozni into sticking around, and we're going to talk about a topic which is really capturing my imagination on an ongoing basis, and that is the idea of crowdfunding. These sites like Indiegogo and Kickstarter. where you basically put forward a project and allow people to invest in the project before it's built. For philanthropic purposes or to get something out of it, but because you believe in a product as it goes downstream. And this whole new model is absolutely fascinating because of the fact that I think a lot of traditional industries are going to be challenged. The status quo is going to be challenged, probably very quickly by these services. Anybody have a comment on that? Put forward a leading question.
I would say that they're already being challenged. I mean, there's a huge thrust of various artistic endeavors that are being funded that either would never be funded previously, mm-hmm. or went through the traditional, you know, musician and record company type thing, you know. And then you have someone like Amanda Palmer who had a huge fan base. Mm-hmm. She wanted to dump her record company, and she basically put out a Kickstarter campaign and raised $2 million to fund her next album, and which is huge. So she's getting money directly from the fans. The fans are getting an opportunity to get all kinds of different things depending on the funding level mm-hmm. that they contribute. And she gets to continue doing what she loves, right? So,
and what an affirmation it must be for an artist or anybody that's creating an artistic product to have people say, I believe in you. I'm going to give my $15, my $25, or my $100. And it's usually not large sums.
No, no.
It's usually very, very, and to get that affirmation back that I believe you can do something that is going to be worth my time. It's a beautiful story.
There's a local band, Hey Ocean, that is currently trying to fund their European tour right now mm-hmm. on Kickstarter. I should actually check to see how they're doing. But one of the interesting things about their the perks that you get from contributing is you could, if you wanted to, if you spent enough money on the campaign, get them to come and perform in your house. And if you're a big fan of the band, like my girlfriend is, that would be huge for her to do.
How much does that cost?
I think it was about $5,000.
That's a lot of money.
It is. But if you're a big fan and maybe you have lots of disposable money.
Or you've really screwed up. And you've got to make a big gesture make it all better. Well, when I first was looking at Kickstarter, I was, as is I think just my bent, I was focused on a lot of the hardware stories around it. The watch what's the name of the
Pebble watch. Which I have one coming.
You have one coming. Now, how soon do you expect to see it?
Well, they were hoping to ship at the end of September, and it's early October.
Yeah,
and so the nice thing about these campaigns is they have the ability to keep you in the loop as to what's going on. Mm-hmm. So what the Pebble folks have been doing is they've been posting their updates. Okay, we went to the plant today and looked at the manufacturing samples, and they have photos and videos and all the different things like that. So you really feel like you're part of the process because you helped make the process happen. And so having that connectivity, whether it's, you know, for a piece of consumer electronics or an album that an artist is creating or a film or what mm-hmm. have you, it's pretty compelling for the people that are participating in this as well as the people that are being funded.
Yeah, the exact opposite of the Apple secrecy, where, you know, guess what it's going to look like, and then we'll tell you exactly what it's like as soon as it's released.
Well, and the other thing is they have the ability to, in real time, with the people that have funded it, hey, we want to make a change. What do you guys think about this? They can throw up a poll, and that poll can dictate the course of action for, you know, whether it's a manufacturing thing or maybe a theme for a song or, you know, who knows what mm-hmm. it is. And I get lots of emails from a lot of the projects that I've funded. It's asking me questions, you know, simple things like your shipping address and that type of thing. But also, what do you think about this? What color do you want? You know, we were given options for our Pebble watches to change the color, even though I had picked the black one originally, mm-hmm. you know, and giving those options on the fly, you really feel like you're part of something different.
So community engagement is very important with them, and shaping a product right from the very beginning is, and having a built-in fan base is wonderful.
And transparency, all things which traditional businesses are not good at.
They're not fans of doing that. No.
Yeah, they close it down. We're the ones. We're in control. And so it's absolutely shattering the model. Now, the hardware success stories are few and far between. They are spectacular. Ones like the Pebble Watch, where they were trying to raise, I think, $100,000. They raised like $10 million.
Absolutely.
And so there is the odd success story in hardware. But in the artistic and the philanthropic side, we see there's a lot more success to be found. And there's a lot. They might be smaller in scale, but they're profound to the people that are involved.
Well, and that's the mm-hmm. great thing about it is that it doesn't have to be something that sells $10 million worth. I mean, Hey Ocean, they were funded. They asked for $30,000 for their European tour. They got $42,000. So they're going to have a really nice, comfortable tour now. And everybody got what they wanted. All the fans are going to get what they want out of it. And so having that you know, smaller scale ask, as opposed to coming and saying, I want to record an album or I want to do this, there might be a pre-associated cost with that through traditional methods. But this way, depending on how much funding they get, they can make an adjustment on the and change how they deliver what they're going to do. There's been a lot of examples of people that have been overfunded. And mm-hmm. So what do they do with the extra money? Well, they make the product better, right? So they over-deliver because they got more money than they needed, right? And they have the flexibility to that. That doesn't always happen in the corporate world.
Oh, of course not. Well, if you end up with selling more than you plan, you just end up with more profit.
Exactly.
Whereas this is much more community-oriented.
And profit doesn't necessarily seem to be a motive for a lot of the people that are doing these things. It's just basically keep me, you know, in food and housing while I'm trying to make some awesome. And, you know, not being able to do that is a challenge for some people, especially the artistic people. You know, they don't want to have a $1 million house. They just want to have a roof over their head to keep being an artist.
Which was the hammer the labels used to be able to wield against an artist, is they would give them sustenance,
yeah,
pay for it, and then they would have the upside of the massive benefit downstream of managing the distribution and, of course, making the lion's share of the money. They cannot be thrilled with the evolution of crowdfunding, the traditional record labels.
It's changing the value chain.
It has. It is. And it's allowing fans direct access to the artists in a personal way. They must feel a much tighter relationship with their fan base and the fans with the artists as a result of this direct communication. Now, what's fascinating me is the industry which I'm closest to, which is the television and broadcast industry, which I've spoken to my friends at length about how it is broken and shattered, because the content producers basically have always gone to the distributors for money, and then the distributors have had the product and they've put it into either the theatrical release or into the broadcasters, who then deliver the product to the cable companies, who then collect the money from us. And there's this long chain of middlemen, all taking money, all taking their profit every step of the way, and decisions are being made not on the artistic merit, but on the merchandising opportunities or the financial viability of a product. And us as consumers, we're left with a time-sensitive product that's delivered to us at home. We're told exactly what we're going to be fed by whatever network it is that we're, whatever cable carrier we carry. It isn't happening yet, or I'm not sure it's happening. You guys might be able to correct me. You might have seen areas, but I can see that this crowdfunding model is the next step in the evolutionary chain that maybe HBO started with, you know, basically breaking part of the control cycle, where if you do like Game of Thrones and Game of Thrones decides, HBO decides that they're going to drop it, I could see the community say, no, I'll pay my $99 for the Game of Thrones season right now, and they could completely bypass the funding model, completely bypass the delivery chain, and allow the internet to be the delivery mechanism for all of that video. And oh my gosh, when that happens, it's going to blow the doors off of the broadcast world.
Well, we already saw things like Family Guy and Futurama come back to life because of the fans.
Arrested Development.
And Arrested Development too, yeah. And so having the fan base speak up, you know, now they can speak with their wallets.
Exactly, because the network might not say this much profit is enough, so a show like Arrested Development will go away, whereas the producers of it will say, no, we're happy with that level of profit,
yeah,
which the individuals can deliver, or an alternate delivery method can deliver.
Yeah. The other exciting thing is this gives the opportunity for people that aren't in the industry to create their own media empire, if you will. I have some friends that are interested in creating a DIY type program called Taco Hat TV, and it's about teaching crafts and things like that for kids and that type of thing. And so they have a plan, and they're using Indiegogo as a funding mechanism for that. And that's basically, it gives them the opportunity to, without spending any money up front, or at least not a lot of money up front, to see, is there a fan base for this? Do people want this? And then if the money comes, then they'll make it, right? And depending on how much money comes, they'll make it even better.
Before we leave this, I want Art to fire up his mic. Art, do you know any comedians that are going this route at all? Have you been following any of that?
Not that I know of, but it is giving me some ideas.
So you're sitting there right now going, Art Factora Live, my very own album.
Well, I think there are some, we just recently, I don't know if you guys followed the Louis C.K. model.
Yes. I was just going to mention that.
Yeah, he recently funded his own theater and he made a DVD and he sold it for $5, which is pretty much unheard of when it comes to DVD sales, but it sold it all online. So some local Vancouver comedians came up with the same idea or followed the same plan, recorded it at a small, the Waldorf in Vancouver, mm-hmm. and are selling it online for $5 and hoping that, you know, some of their material that they've been honing and crafting for the past 5, 10, 15 years, they sort of, some of these comedians have been around for, 12, 15 years and never put out a professional DVD, and now they get to and then give it to their, sell it to their audience for $5.
And it, and the crowdfunding model takes risk away from the artist, which, I mean, making a bad decision crushes so many artists in their embryonic stage, and they never get a chance. You know, they basically go away. This way here, if you've got a bad idea, you float it, nobody funds it. Guess what? The second best answer to yes is no. If the audience says no, that gives you a chance to go re-entrench, and you haven't spent the money, you haven't lost everything by going down an erroneous path.
And the audience and the fans lose a couple bucks out of their pocket, in theory.
And well, no, they don't actually. If a project doesn't get funded in most of these models, your money doesn't go. Am I correct, John, with that?
It depends.
Okay.
There is some different strings attached depending on the service that you use and also the funding model that you've chosen.
Okay.
Kickstarter generally, if you don't reach your goal, whatever, you know, say you're looking for $10,000 and you get $9,995, nobody gets charged anything. You don't get anything.
Okay.
On Indiegogo, they have a flexible funding campaign option, which means if you only get, say, $5,000 of that $10,000, you can still get that $5,000.
Okay.
It just depends on the service and the thing. The other thing to note, too, especially for our Canadian listeners, is you can't use Kickstarter if you're Canadian.
Yeah.
You have to have an American lawyer or somebody that has access to the American banking system for their payment options. So most Canadians that I know are going the Indiegogo route.
Indiegogo route. Yeah. Very good. Well, we'll be certainly keeping our eye on that. I need to thank John Beeler and Joe Wozni for that. And Art, I think a comedy album from you is exactly what we need.
Are you going to be the first one who puts some money into it?
No, I'll be the last.
Okay.
But I'll get you over the top, buddy.
Thank you.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me now, Mike Vardy of MikeVardy.com. He is a regular guest on the show, of course, comes on and talks about everything life hack oriented, as he is the current editor at lifehack.org. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. I've had a lot of stuff go down this past month. I've had a couple of my posts picked up by Lifehacker, actually.
which is confusing because that's where half the time people go and looking for my stuff that I post on your site, they end up at Lifehacker, which is a good site. It's been around for a long time.
It's great. I mean, the post that went up there, one was called How to Stop Time, and one was called, you know, I mean, the one which I, you cannot do. Let me be clear about this. It was a great headline, but you really physically cannot stop time.
It's a different, yes. It's a worthwhile pursuit, though, to try.
It is.
Because if you could figure,
I mean,
you've got
that button on your oven. So
right.
You know, but that's all it does is stop time on the oven. So no, it's been a great month. I'm excited to be back.
Good stuff. Now let's. What was the highlights for the last month there at Lifehack?
Well, Lifehack had a lot of great posts this month. I mean, despite I didn't write a lot for them this month, but we definitely had a lot of great posts. One I want to start with is you know, I work from home, and I'm obviously trying to be as productive as I can. So Timo Kiander wrote a post called Five Critical Elements of Successful Work-at-Home Productivity.
Mm.
And he talks about, you know, a lot of things such as, like, planning your home office is one of those things that are really, it's really integral, because what happens if you don't plan it properly initially is that you end up fiddling with it throughout time that mm-hmm. you spend at home, and that actually takes you further away from getting things done as you go along. So it's important to plan that stuff out, not just the physical stuff, but like your non-physical stuff. So your email processes, your boundaries with your family. For example, my home office at this point is in the master bedroom because it's the only place that has a door that I can shut so I can do things like this.
And
so
your family respect.
Goes over quite a bit of this stuff.
And you have to train your family to respect that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They know when work time is and when, you know, when playtime is, essentially.
So physical workspace for a home office is crucial.
Absolutely, absolutely. You need to, and it's like we've talked about before when it comes to productivity systems, you need to do that front-end work first. So you need to actually say, okay, here's my spot, here's where I'm going to work in my apartment or in my home, and this is where it has to be. You could rent outside if you want. I know a lot of people do that just so that they can have that separation. The other thing is in some neighborhoods, especially like where we live on the West Coast, there are a lot of garden suites because our weather is fairly temperate, so you can get away with having a small little studio in your backyard or
a garage.
Just off this.
Yeah.
So it depends on how much land you have, but here on Vancouver Island, there are a lot of places that you'll walk down the streets and you'll see little 8x10s or 10x10s in the backyard, and those are being used as little home offices or garden studios. So, I mean, you want to make sure you put yourself in a position, but that's just the one piece of the puzzle, of course.
And the second thing the second point is email. Is email still the biggest time waster out there?
Oh, yeah, because people still don't know how to use email properly. They don't either use it. They use it either to manage tasks or they use it to communicate in ways that it probably shouldn't be communicated, where you can, you know, use IM or you could pick up the phone, as odd as that sounds. So email is, and people still seem to think that if they get through all their email and they get to that, you know, that haven of inbox zero, then they have been super productive throughout the day. But in many cases, that's just a fallacy.
Yeah, it's my inbox is not zero. My inbox is 6,643. I'm looking right now.
Wow! Well, that's about as far as from inbox zero as you can get.
But you know, the thing is,
you're getting things done, and there's a lot of emails that come in that you could either let go. Part of that, you know, the David Allen GTD system of, you know, do it, delegate it. If it takes less than 2 minutes, get, you know, deal with it. And if you don't need it at all, just delete it. And you have to treat email in the same way. When you get an email message and you work through that process of, do I need to do it now? Can I defer it? Can I delegate it? Or can I just delete it?
See, I realize that I will never get to zero. I just can't, unless I just nuke everything. Mm-hmm. So but I just, you know, there's an app we've talked about in the past, 3030, mm-hmm. which is a time, it's a task timer. And mm-hmm. I just now have started saying, okay, I'm giving myself a half an hour first thing in the morning and a half an hour first thing in the afternoon to do email. And anything that I do, and I just go in and I work through my email. And anything that the rest of the day, I still am in email occasionally, but I don't sit there and I don't worry about cleaning up my inbox. I don't worry about looking back to see if there's anything I missed. I do that in those basically an hour a day in two chunks. And at least I feel at this point that I'm not missing anything.
Right, right. And the other thing is that works great for you. And a lot of people, that is what they'll do is they'll check email first thing in the morning and then they get sucked into it. So they end up doing something that's either someone else wants because they've received an email saying, oh, can you do this for me? Or don't forget about this. Instead of doing what people often refer to as their most important task or their MIT first.
Yeah.
So getting something else out of the way and then saying, okay, I'm going to check email now that it's 10 o'clock. I've spent the first hour of my day or the first however much of time of my day working on something that's really going to move all of my work, all of my career forward. Now I'll go into email. So you got to learn how to treat email in a way that it's just another task and not a means to the road to every other task you have on your plate.
And some tools that seem to be designed to make us more productive are counterproductive. Ones like, I'm thinking of a tool like Growl, which is a notification manager, which basically anytime an email comes in or a text about me or a tweet, I get a little window pop up on the corner of my screen, supposedly unobtrusively, but it pops up with the beginning of that email. It just let me know that I've got an email coming in. And it distracts the heck out of me. I think I'm going to disable it.
Well, or you just turn manual email checking. So instead of having your inbox automatically check, there is a setting both in mail.app and in Outlook where you can say, no, I will check my email. Mm. Don't search for it every 5 minutes, every 15 minutes, every 30. When I'm ready to check my email, I will go in and check it. We have to start looking at email in the same way that we look at, you know, the office phone. Mm. You're not going to call an accountant's office at 9 p.m. at night and expect them to be there. You're going to expect to get voicemail.
Yeah.
Well, there should be really no difference with email, but the problem is because it gives you that instant connection, people expect an instant response. And I think we're going to get there because there are tools out there that are allowing people to, you know, defer email to later, such as a Wayfind, you know, they're allowing themselves to mitigate it. But I think it's also a cultural thing where people are starting to say, you know what, my workday ends at 5 or 6 or 7. I'm not going to answer my email after that, and I'll deal with it the next day.
Good. So that's 5 critical elements to successful work-at-home productivity. Excellent. We will post that on our site. What's next?
Well, there's one written by Teresa Griffith called The Top 20 Time Wasters and the Top Worthwhile Activities.
Okay.
And some of them on here are interesting because they're counterintuitive in some ways. For example, one of them listed here is exercise. And that's listed as a time waster. Now, some people go, well, wait a minute, you have to exercise. But you don't need to spend a lot of time on it, and in the estimation of the author here. And there are some people who will spend, like, you know, 2 hours, you know, working out, or an hour. Whereas there are workouts out there that let you get your run in or your lifting of weights in 20 to 30 minutes. So those kind of things believe it or not, you can get sucked into, and it's a habit, right? And habits can be they're great, but you can also get sucked into spending too much time in one area. In fact, some people spend a lot of time on exercise because they don't want to move on to some of the other things that they mm-hmm. don't really enjoy doing.
Or they're
trying to build that habit.
Yeah.
So they spend all their time on it to get really good at it, and they've just traded one, thing that kind of kills their time for something else.
And also going to the gym. I mean, if you can do a workout at home, it takes you 35 minutes for the same 30-minute workout. It's 20-minute drive to the gym, 20-minute drive home, and 10 minutes visiting. It's suddenly an hour and a half.
Well, yeah, and I mean, for example, I used to use free weights, and when I was traveling and stuff, I found that now I have to find where the nearest gym is, and I have to. You know, so I picked up some resistance bands,
mm-hmm.
and it took some time to get to. I actually watched how to do the exercises. So again, that front end work. But now, I mean, at home when I'm traveling, wherever, I can just throw a resistance band or two into my suitcase, and I've got my gym with me.
I'm looking at her list here, and it's almost a fun read just for the laughter. Facebook is the number one time raster. As far as she goes, but down number 4 is personal grooming. I'm just thinking, the author of this might be a fairly interesting person, if somewhat unkempt.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, there are a lot of people that spend a lot of time, in doing that grooming and stuff. For example, we hear a lot of people they'll brush their teeth in the shower to save time, or guys will shave their face in the shower once they've gotten familiar with the curvatures and stuff, so mm-hmm. that they can do that.
Yep.
So there are ways to make that work. But yeah, I mean, some of these are not going to apply to certain people. And then some of the ones that are worthwhile, it's interesting because one of the top time wasters is Facebook, but one of the top worthwhile things is connecting with friends and or family. So there's a balance there because, for example, I don't have any family members out on the West Coast. Mine are all in Ontario or mm-hmm. Alberta or up in the Yukon. So I have to... Obviously, in a lot of ways, Facebook helps me with that. So it's a good read to kind of give yourself a bit of a gut check to figure out, oh, wait a minute, I'm doing too much of that, or, oh, I'm not doing enough of that.
Good. Now, this one kind of dovetails with the next thing that you told me about, which is a lot of the traditional things that we look at as far as success, do what you love, all those sorts of things. There's a book out that flies in the face of that.
There is. Cal Newport, he's got a blog, Study Hacks, and mm-hmm. Really smart guy. He's written a post called Welcome to the Post-Productivity Era. So he talks more about where we've shifted in terms of the kind of sites that, Life Hack and Life Hacker and all of these are getting into more of a mindful or thoughtful productivity. His book is called So Good They Can't Ignore You, and it's based on a Steve Martin quote. Where Steve Martin has basically said, how do you get noticed? How do you be so good that they can't ignore you? And the argument that the author, Cal Newport, makes is that don't follow your passion because it could be dangerous. Because you're actually, in a lot of cases, some people who start to follow their passion will do it without, again, doing some of that front-end work, without building up what he calls career capital and setting themselves up for success. And other people will stay in use the career path that they're on and focus using what he calls the craftsman mindset to get to where they really want to be in that profession. So, for example, he talks about a filmmaker or a showrunner who started out doing menial tasks and eventually worked their way up by building career capital and making the right moves within the organization and just learning on the job until he got himself into a position where he was doing the work he loved. So it does fly in the face. And he actually spoke at the World Domination Summit this past year, where there are a lot of people who are all about doing what you love and following your passion. And there was a lot of head nodding, not in disagreement, but kind of like, you know, he clicked with them. And it's a great book. It's one of those books, and my wife doesn't buy into a lot of the stuff that I write about much of the time. But when she saw me pour through this book and I actually rhymed off some quotes to her, she goes, you know, this is one of the first books that you've read that I'm really liking.
Well, and part of it has to be doing what you love to a lot of people might translate into there's a shortcut to success.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's saying, and it sounds to me a little bit like what you're saying, is you pick whatever career you're in, you build love in by becoming good at it, which builds self-worth, which, you know, creates a relationship between you and you and what you do. But the bottom line is that you have to pay your dues regardless where you are.
Right. And the biggest thing is he talks about control. And I mean, I've had this happen when I was working for Costco. I put myself in a situation, this was years ago, where I was there long enough and built up enough career capital that when I was ready to make a career change or a shift, I didn't jump out wholesale, no pun intended. I put myself in a position where I had enough career capital that I could pick and choose and take some of the control back in my life so that I could pursue some of the stuff that I'm doing now and build the career capital into what I'm doing now. So, there's some really great stuff in here, and it's a fantastic read. It's called So Good They Can't Ignore You by Cal Newport. And if you feel that you're kind of stuck in a rut with the work you're in or not sure, you know, you say, I used to love my job, but I don't know what to do with it anymore, and maybe I'm doing the wrong thing, this is a book that you should probably give a read.
Now, speaking of books, you've just finished an interview with the author of the Getting Things Done method of productivity, Dave Allen.
Yes, David Allen. He was on our podcast recently, Mics on Mics, and he hinted that there was going to be an announcement. And as we record this, the announcement went live this morning, where he's partnered up with a software company called Intentional Software, which was founded by former Microsoft chief architect Charles Simonier, and I'm hoping I pronounced the last name right. But basically, what's happening is they're creating what's called a meta application. That's the plan, where and this has been sorely missing on the Windows platform. It's been sorely missing everywhere. But I mean, the Windows platform has not really ever had a full-on GTD type of application. And what they're hoping to do here is rather than build an app that does GTD, it's an app that supports it. So it's kind of a meta application. So you'll be able to choose the popular leading applications out there, such as Dropbox, Evernote, things of that nature, but this meta application will allow them to all kind of, you know, cohabitate and integrate into the GTD philosophy. And when I talked to David about it, I asked him, I said, so David, when Eric Anderson, the CEO of Intentional, approached you about this, was your reaction like, finally? And he said, yes, it was finally. Someone's going to put together all the pieces. And I'm really excited about this because they're not just doing this on their own. They're actually reaching out to the GTD community, looking for engineers to partner with, looking for other partners to try to make this, you know, happen. Maybe not necessarily in short order, but it's no longer a someday maybe on their list. It's something that they're actively pursuing and is a high priority. And it's especially sorely needed in the Windows community, but it's also going to provide a nicer and probably lower barrier to entry for anyone who's not really into GTD yet.
And that, of course, for most productivityists, is the gospel, according to Dave Allen.
Absolutely. And the thing is, most people get confused about what it is, and they have to use this particular tool and all this stuff. Yeah. And I think that if Intentional Software and David Allen Company can put together this meta application, it's going to answer a lot of those questions. It's going to say, oh, wait, I don't have to give up the thing that I'm really familiar using. I can just incorporate it into what this meta application does. I think you're going to see a real, I wouldn't even say renaissance, but just perhaps even an explosion of the user base, not just the heavy-duty GTDers, but new GTDers that are going to be able to get it. They're going to be like, oh, I get it. This is how this works.
Now, next month when we talk to you, Mike Vardy is going to be doing something a little bit different.
Yes, I'm moving on to doing a new project. I'm leaving Lifehack, and I'm going to be going to my blog, and it's going to be productivityist.com. I mean, I've coined the term, and at this point, I'm taking that on full time. I'm going to be doing some freelance writing and feature writing for other websites. I'm still doing some work for The Next Web, actually, and I'll probably guest post at Lifehack for some time. But I'm starting to see some of that other stuff take off a bit. So it's time for me to make a bit of a change. Maybe find out if I'm so good that I can't be ignored on my own. So we'll see how this goes.
Well, good luck with it. We'll look forward to hearing how it goes next month.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now, Julian Saunders from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, London Drugs computer expert. How are you doing, Julian?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing great. Now, you guys got to be a little bit chuffed because Microsoft is going to be rolling out their shiny new toy later this week, and we can't go into London Drugs and buy it. That sucks.
Yeah, the Microsoft Surface they've decided to do an online only campaign for now. They have a couple of models available for people wanting to get into the Microsoft hardware.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of products like the Surface. We just don't have one that's made by Microsoft.
And yeah, I think they're taking all their lessons from Apple. Their commercials look like Apple, and how they treat their channel is now just like Apple.
Yeah, it feels that way sometimes.
Sometimes it does. So, but let's talk. The Surface is going to be a fairly exciting product because it is the first. Well, it allows us to have an option in the tablet market that's not Android and it's not Apple. So it's not wide open for everybody and it's not absolutely closed to everybody. It's kind of that happy medium, the Microsoft Surface. And the RT is shipping this Friday. It starts to ship. What's the hallmark of this product as far as you're concerned?
The screen is apparently a brilliant quality, everybody that's had a hands-on, and it's a very thin, lightweight, easy-to-use tablet for productivity and staying in touch. It's for the person that wants something that's easy to throw in the bag and run out the door. Microsoft has also taken a great care and attention in giving it very good aesthetics as far as when you're using it. They have a really nice kickstand that comes out, quick and easy to place in front of you, and a keyboard that apparently is very nice to type on, that's super thin, that works as a cover.
Yes, a cover. And that's the big thing. So this tablet is designed for business purposes.
For business and for people wanting to do a little bit more than just go online and check Facebook, yeah.
Yeah, and so they're giving a little bit. I do more with my iPad than just check Facebook. I'm just telling you right now. I also check Twitter. But the version that we're getting out for a little bit over $500 in Canada now is going to be including Microsoft Office. So in my mind, you know, the inclusion of Office really tells me that this is all about productivity in business.
Right, yeah, and it's the Windows 8 RT offering from Microsoft. There will be other Windows RT offerings from other hardware manufacturers as well in stores right away. So it's not an exclusive to just them. It's Windows RT is the version of Windows 8 that's designed for tablets, and other ones from Asus and Samsung will have a lot of different offerings. The biggest difference between Windows 8 and Windows 8 RT is Windows 8 RT, you can't install just any software. All of your apps have to come through the App Store from Microsoft, and they've cut out some of the customization that's available to the full Windows 8 experience. Windows 8 RT still allows you to do things like connect a storage device to your tablet. So if the hardware supports a USB port, you'll still be able to plug in a flash drive. So they're separating themselves from the iPad that way.
There's a lot of philosophical differences between the iPad and the Windows Surface. But their similarity is with Windows 8 and the ART and the tablet operating system is your operating system experience on both your desktop and your tablet should be pretty much identical. Am I correct?
Correct, yeah. And with the functionality of SkyDrive, it quickly lets you take your photos and contacts and emails from one device to another, similar to what Apple has with iCloud. The advantage with Windows 8 is that it also takes your settings and your other customized features, like your desktop and your tile sizes, and the groups that you've laid them out in will all synchronize between the devices no matter what they are.
So that's a full Microsoft ecosystem on the way. Of course, the missing piece still is going to be the Windows 8 phone, which we should be seeing coming down the pipe fairly soon as far as options. And then you will have the same. You'll have a complete unified ecosystem.
You got it.
That's going to be interesting to see. It's going to take a little bit of time to convince me to switch back over and try it out, but I think I might be willing to give it a shot.
Well, and once you get your hands on some of the other forms too, not just the Microsoft Surface, some of the convertibles that are coming out, some of the hardware will be a really great thing to pull you into the Windows world.
Julian Saunders is our computer expert from the good folks at London Drugs. Thanks so much for your time, Julian.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. And Art, I think that we should probably just put a bow on this show and just send it off to the world and let them have at it. What do you say?
I'm okay with that.
You're good with that?
Yes.
Okay, so next week we're going to be back. I'm toying with the idea of doing App Wednesday next week. I know it's a little bit early, but there's so many apps out there that we want to talk about.
You just want another chance to beat the rest of us.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I won really last time.
Well, I had a lot of
John Beeler. John Beeler came in with some pretty heavy duties. I'm not going to invite him back next
week. I had a lot of downtime in Hawaii to look for new apps.
Okay.
They will be all like coconut and pineapple
scented.
Yes.
I am Steve Dotto. Art Factor is producer of this fine program. We look forward to seeing you again next week right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.